Hi, this is Ned Siegfried from Siegfried & Jensen. As proud sponsors of BeliefCast, we hope you are inspired by Todd's weekly podcasts, which contain so many courageous stories of recovery and personal growth. Remember, it's not what happened in the past that matters, it's what happens in the future. We invite you all to work hard and be optimistic about your future. Enjoy today's podcast.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Todd Sylvester with the Todd Inspires BeliefCast. Thank you once again for tuning in. I know I say this every time, but it's the truth. I'm so grateful for all of you, and I feel blessed that you believe in me enough to tune in, and I can't thank you for that more than I, in words. It's tough to even express. And then my sponsors, Maury Nutrition, Wasatch Recovery, Siegfried & Jensen, Thread Wallets, and then the beautiful music you hear at the beginning and the end of the show is by my good friend Paul Cardall. He's an amazing award-winning pianist, and I love him, so thank you for letting us use your music. And as always, I'm so grateful for the people that come in to share their amazing stories and their lives with us, and today we're joined by Lori Allred. Lori, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. We've known each other now for several years, yeah. I would say, now, and
yeah.
I got to meet you because you invited me to come speak at one of your events that you had put together, and that's when I really got to know you well, and I can't thank you enough for that opportunity. That was such a great blessing for me, and so that's when you and I got connected. A little background on Lori. She grew up in beautiful Lake Powell, Arizona. Wow. Who can say that?
Not very many people. Only a few of us.
Right? You have five children, five grandchildren. Congratulations on that. You got a beautiful family, by the way, just amazing. You have a passion for personal development. You're an entrepreneur. You own, is it Salon Suites? Is that how you say
it? Yes.
In Colorado. And it's a home of 23 independent salon professionals. And again, I didn't know that either. That's really cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. And it's interesting why it's in Colorado. We'll talk about that in a minute. And again, during the pandemic is when you organize that personal development for teens. And that was so needed at the time and such a wonderful event. Again, you love your family. You love spending time. You love traveling. Again, you love just learning. And your family's been through a lot. You had a son who went through some really difficult times. And I'd love to hear more about that because I think our listeners will really relate with that. And so anyway, with that said, Lori, tell us a little bit about you and, you know, about growing up in Lake Powell.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for the introduction.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I grew up in Lake Powell, Arizona, specifically Page, Arizona, super small town.
Yeah.
And my dad talks a lot about choosing to raise us there. He wanted us to be a big fish in a small pond. And I feel like that has blessed my life immensely, to grow up in a place where I could do anything. I felt like I could do anything. Yeah. And because we're limited in the resources that we have, when I talk about the things that I was able to do in high school, people laugh because, you know, my kids now, they're like mini professionals at what they do, that you kind of pick one thing. They start when they're three and they keep doing that.
Right.
And I was able to play every sport and do everything. And I actually thought I was good at everything because there's not a lot of competition. And it wasn't well into my adult years that I realized I'm actually not really good at anything, but I just can play a lot of different sports and do a lot of different things. And
right.
I got to have a lot of unique experiences because it's a small town and my parents are amazing and they just raised us to experience things and do a lot of different things. And I could do that in that small town. So it's been a blessing to me for sure.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted you on this show is I love the way you carry yourself. I mean, you really do. You hold your head high. You're confident. You're energetic. You really give out positivity in this world. Were you always like that as in Page too, or just that kid who could believe he could do anything? I mean, it's kind of what you're saying a little bit here, but have you always been like that?
Honestly, yes, I think I have. I think such a testament to the way that I was raised, like from as early as I can remember. If we were on a road trip, we were listening to Lou Tice, if you know who he is, like Lou Tice or Zig Ziglar.
Zig Ziglar.
Yeah, yes. I was just like, that was like gospel words to us, like to be raised on that. So I was raised by parents who had their own hardships that they went through, that they overcame, that personal development was such a big part of their life. And so it's always been a part of my life. I was going to talk about this later, but when I was 5 years old, I was in an accident. On a motorcycle. I was actually just sitting on it, but it fell over and cut my head, like sliced my head open.
Oh, wow.
Over 100 stitches.
Oh.
Like from here, like from all the way to the top of my head, all the way like through my face. And
wow.
I had to have my, I couldn't look at myself because I was so, it was so hard to look at with all this. You know, in Page, Arizona, they don't have a plastic surgeon.
They have
a family practice, family medicine doctor that sees everything. And lucky for me, he did an amazing job of sewing it up. But I remember after the accident, my parents showing it to me, and I couldn't look at myself.
Yeah, I bet.
Because it was so gruesome to look at. And it barely missed my eye. My face was all swollen. They had to shave my head.
Holy cow.
And, you know, for months, I couldn't, like, even going outside, if I would see a reflection of myself, like in a mirror or in a window, I couldn't see myself. Like, it was so gruesome. I couldn't look at myself.
My goodness.
And so I think that happened when I was five. And so I had to see myself as something else, like other than beauty. But I think once I got through that, I never saw myself as not beautiful. Like I had this big scar that I felt, it's hard. Can you see it? It's hard to see it
now. You can barely see it.
Yeah.
But yeah. But now that you point that out. Yeah,
yeah.
I can see it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I mean, but to me, it's become like something I'm so proud of that I overcame.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That I overcame that. And I didn't see myself as ugly or as scarred or just like as something that I overcame. And my parents would say, if you want, like, we'll take you to a plastic surgeon and, you know, have them blur it. And I just would always say, no, like it's part of me.
That's
like
amazing.
It's who I am. So I feel like early on I saw myself as more than that. And then also like something like a scar that I'm proud of that I overcame. So,
wow. Do you think that's because of the influence of your parents to think of it that way? Cause that's impressive for a kid to go to that.
Yeah.
Right.
100%. I think I always felt like, I always felt like so loved and so validated by my parents.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I was so much more than that. So it truly wasn't actually, it was hard for me to look at because it was so gruesome, but it was just something that I was just raised to overcome. So
that's amazing. I love that. You know, I work with a lot of clients, you know, high risk clients who've been going through a lot, and some of them have attempted to take their lives by cutting themselves, cutting their wrists. And we had this girl, one of my clients, and she had cut her wrists from, I mean, you know, vertically all the way up to almost her elbow. And it's like this jagged cut. And so she would always wear long sleeves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she was just really ashamed of it because she just thought, if people see this, what are they going to think of me? And we worked on, I had her just like wear short sleeves and just tap that scar and just say, I've overcome.
That's
and I love that. Just reminded me when you said, hey, look at this, is like, I overcame this.
Yeah.
And she was able to kind of get past that and wear short sleeves and be okay with it. And
yeah, that's
so
amazing.
It's cool to hear you say that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So, so you're raised there. How did you, what happened after, I guess, Lake Powell, Eric?
So I graduated from Page High School. Went to BYU, met my husband early on, and he was going to medical school. So I did 6 semesters at BYU.
Okay.
And then we went to San Antonio for him to go to medical school.
Okay.
And that is where I got my degree because I started a business. Like we started, but mostly me. My husband was in medical school.
He was so busy doing that.
He was definitely very preoccupied.
Yeah.
But we started a deli. So we owned a deli and a frozen yogurt shop that was real close to the medical school campus. So I started that, ran that for 5 years.
Dang,
and I figured that's where I got my degree in business. I learned so much from that. They told us they were doing a small construction project. We were at the end of a really busy shopping center, and that went on for 24 months. It was supposed to be it was supposed to be like a 2-month project, and right. they blocked off our entrance. So I learned all kinds of things about marketing. We started off so busy, like lying out the door. We invited all the medical students, and people really supported us. But then they couldn't even get to us because they had to go through 20 stores to get to us. So that was, there's a lot that I learned, the School of Hard Knocks, but a lot I learned about business through that. And I ran that until our first year of residency. We moved to Oklahoma City. Okay. And so I sold it. And then I started a real estate relocation for physicians. So by then I had 2 kids, and I started a relocation service for doctors. Okay. So we would help them relocate, and I got my real estate license, and I just referred them to agents that were familiar with like the medical center area, wherever they were going for their to start their residencies. So I did that for 4-5 years. We lived in Oklahoma City, and then we moved to we did an externship in Europe. We lived in Europe for a few months, and then we went to San Diego. He did a fellowship with UCSD. And so I kept doing my physician relocation service in San Diego. And then we moved to Colorado.
Okay.
So we were in Colorado for 17 years. My husband's an orthopedic surgeon, so he was practicing in Colorado. So we were there for 17 years. And he started flying, kind of going through a midlife crisis, and started flying to entertain himself.
Wow.
He got good at what he was doing, got a little bored, so he started flying. And we had 2 kids that had come out here for college, and they decided that they liked Utah better than Colorado, and that they didn't think they'd come back to Colorado. So I looked at my husband and said, we got to get out of here. We got to go where our kids are.
Yeah.
And so he started a practice. He's along with flying, he does rural medicine. He decided, because we wanted to move to Utah, he decided to do rural medicine. So he flies to rural areas.
Oh, really?
And so, so we've been here for 5 years.
That's cool.
Yeah. We've been here for 5 years, and before we decided to move, I bought a salon suite, so I've had that now for 5 years. So right before, I guess 6 years, I've had it for 6 years. So right before we moved, I'd had that for a year, and so I've kept that while I was here, and that's been honestly an amazing business. I love that. You said in the bio, I have 23 salon professionals, and most of them are single moms and wonderful people.
Cool. Yeah,
that I get to work with. So I love that. Love them. I'm actually in the process of selling that company right now and on to my next thing. But we've been in Utah now for 5 years.
5 years.
Yeah, we live in Draper, so we've been here for 5 years, and we absolutely love it. And all the challenges of really, it was like starting a new career for him to go from, he worked for a big company where his schedule was pretty set, to really creating his own company and his own thing. So he works in several different places and flies and does his thing. And so, we've been here for 5 years. We love it and happy to be here.
Yeah, that's amazing. So you're currently selling this, your salon suites. Do you go there a lot, though? Is it back and forth a lot?
I've been so lucky. I have an amazing manager, and we talk a to go there so much.
Yeah, I don't have to go there.
Nice. Yeah, it's a great business. So I've been able to do a lot of it remotely. At first, I went back and forth a lot. And then through the pandemic, we got good at communicating and not going there a lot. So I go there like probably 3 or 4 times a year is all. But
gotcha. Yeah. So. Well, obviously, you guys are go-getters, man. You guys are out doing things, and all the way back to when you started that deli. Is that when you realized, man, I really love this, trying to create things and to build things up? Is that kind of what
Yeah, definitely. I feel like I just have that in me, the way that I was raised by entrepreneurial parents. And so I had that in me, but also realized that looking into finishing college, it would cost me more to go to finish my degree than it would to put my husband through medical school.
Okay. Yeah.
And so we just decided, I'm gonna figure something out and create something. And I don't like to say this very often because I give away how young I was when I got married, but I was 19 when I started that. And I had 19 employees, like mostly teenage kids. And
that's amazing.
Yeah, I learned so much from doing that. But yes, that definitely started me on the path. But growing up, my parents raised us like, you know, you want money, like we'd paint addresses on curbs. And we always kind of, I definitely, you know, growing up in Page, I worked when I was 13. And I worked at a restaurant when I was 13. Yeah. They must have not had child labor laws because we always worked. Well,
probably because Page too is social. We need people, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a unique place to grow up. But we did little businesses growing up. So it was naturally like what I thought of is, you know, my husband didn't make any money for years. So I wanted things and wanted things for my kids. And I wanted to be able to be able to stay home with my kids and work. Yeah. And so I knew I had to create my own thing if I wanted to have a flexible schedule. So
I love that.
Yeah.
Is it fair to say you've cultivated this along with your parents, the things that you guys did, this belief that you can do anything?
Yes.
Is that fair?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what I get from you.
Yes. My dad used to not let us say, like, we couldn't say, I can't. Mm. Like, if you say you can't, that's
like
an excuse
to not
try.
It's like a swear word or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. For sure. So it was just, I was just raised on figure it out, like create something, you know, go get it, create something. And it was really, really important to me to pass that on to my kids too.
Yeah. So I know you're a woman of faith and it means a lot to you. Is that, were you raised religious?
Yes.
And
yes, for
is that
sure.
part of your upbringing?
Yes, for sure. Yeah. Very faithful, strong belief in God and strong. You put this into words so well, you know, as you said that I put together a like personal development summit for teenagers that during the pandemic. And one thing that you said in your talk that has always stuck with me, and I've heard you say it on your podcast a lot, that life is happening for you.
Yeah.
And I feel like from a faith-based aspect, I was raised that way. You know, if it's not this, there's something better, and that life is happening for you and all things will work together for your good. And I'm not always perfect at believing that.
Right.
It's hard. It's hard when you're in the messy middle.
Right.
It's hard to see that. But believing that there is a God that wants something better for you and that will guide you along the way is definitely a huge guiding. That's been a guiding aspect in my life for sure. So,
you know, if you don't mind, just for our listeners too, like what do you do to help cultivate your faith and I guess strengthen it? Because I think a lot of times people hear that and they go, oh, okay, she's a woman of faith. And what exactly does that mean? Because I know I have a lot of listeners that are probably not sure of a higher power or God or that kind of thing. And so what do you do to cultivate that and to have that connection, if you will?
So for me, it's a daily practice. And, you know, in my best mm-hmm. weeks, I do that, you know, five out of 7 days, I'm good at doing that, but just immersing myself in, you know, for me, it's immersing myself in reading things that bring me closer to God. And that is my scriptures, it's talks, but I am a huge believer in personal development. Like that's a part of my daily life as well. And it's not, it's something that I feel like goes hand in hand absolutely with my faith. And something that I've done that would probably come up later in the podcast, but something that was really important to me is I homeschooled my kids for 4.5 years because they were so busy doing the things that were important to them and things that they had decided to do. And I didn't feel like we had enough time as a family or we had enough time to implement the things that are really important to me, like being able to have a practice that includes God, being able to include a practice that includes personal development. Mm-hmm. And so that was, I mean, I'm honestly a terrible homeschool teacher, but I was really good.
I doubt it. I bet you're pretty good.
No, I really, really wasn't, but I was good at teaching them personal development and also teaching them, you know, we'd have faith-based practice. We have a personal development practice and then a lot of things they did on their own. And then they all had like an entrepreneurial endeavor that they were working on. And
that's
so
cool.
My oldest daughter had she did photography that she developed into an amazing business. And then my second daughter had a salt spray she had a salt spray company.
That's awesome.
And that she went on to realize that she actually does not love owning her own business, but she loved designing the labels and things. So she went on to be a designer, and she started that during that time. And my son published a book during that time when he was 16 and had a podcast, and it just gave them so much more time, and it gave me so much more time with them to be able to spend time with them and foster those things that, you know, a curriculum that was important to me. And so that's something I'm really proud of. Like, is that we had such a great practice of like 5 days a week. We were definitely in that and doing that, and we could travel and do those things. So that's something that I was able to do in myself, but also really able to pass on to my kids. And at times, to be honest, like I had kids that absolutely hated it, but they have all come around to like, it's definitely a big part of their life. Personal development and faith, both are both important to all of them.
Well, the beauty of doing the homeschool is it allowed you to do those things. Yeah. They wouldn't have got that. I mean, on the level, I guess, at a regular public school, right? So how cool is that, you know, to be able to, okay, guys, what are you going to go create kind of thing? I love that.
Go create something. I don't care what it is. Just go do something.
And again, were you homeschooled when you were?
No.
No. Okay. No. I was just curious if that was part of.
But Page High School was not hard. So I had a lot of time to do other things.
For sure.
Because I have very few memories of myself studying. I'll say that. Okay. Very few. Outside of school, I didn't. We did our schoolwork in school, and then I didn't do much outside of school by way of academics.
we mentioned you have 5 kids, 5 grandkids, and you know, like I said, you have a beautiful family. They're
Thank
all doing
you.
Great things, and they carry themselves well as well.
Thank you.
And I think that has a lot to do with you and your husband and the way you guys have raised them. I know you've gone through some tough times too. One of your sons went through some really difficult times. If you're comfortable, would love to hear your thoughts on that and what, you know, explain what happened to your son and then kind of maybe lessons learned.
Yeah. Okay. I would love to talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. With 5 kids, I would say that all of my kids have been through hard things.
Yeah.
My oldest is 28 down to 17, and I feel like they've all been through hard things and some of them much more than others. But yeah, so my son Easton, you should have him on your podcast.
I would love
to. He's amazing.
We'll make that happen. I'm down.
Yeah, but he so starting when we started homeschooling him, he was started out as a soccer player, basketball player, and realized that he's this incredible runner. We put him in cross country, just across cross train for basketball season.
Yeah.
And he was just absolutely destroying everyone. Like he would, so he would be in a race and he would finish like several minutes before everyone else. Like his biggest challenge was knowing the course. Like he'd get lost, find his way, and still like no one would come in.
That's amazing.
For so long. Like he was just amazing. And, he was setting all kinds of records. And, you know, at the time we're homeschooling, he started a podcast. He was just absolutely obsessed with personal development, just being the best that he could be. He's running. He was homeschooled, so he would run. He ran for a couple of different high schools and was setting all kinds of records. His junior year, I could do a whole podcast on this, but he couldn't, he had to move schools. One school, he couldn't run high school races. And so he was training with the team, but he had to do the coach put him in a college race, and it was a D1 college race. And he said, you know, we're standing on the field, and he said, you know, I feel bad for doing this to him, but I just really want to see what he can do, you know, in this college race. Because he, at the time, he couldn't run high school races, but he could run a college race. So he gets out there and, you know, he's staying with at the front of the pack. And we're like, gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah,
we're standing next to coach, like he's at the front of the pack. And this is the beginning of his junior year of high school. And what do you know? He pulls out in front and he wins this college race.
No way.
And I wish I could remember his stats, but he wins it by like 15 seconds.
Wow.
Yeah. And he's a junior in high school.
That's incredible.
And after that race, which is really cool that he, at the time he had a YouTube, And it's nice that we have all this documented. But after that race, he got sick. Like he felt like he had the flu. And, you know, I remember that moment of like celebrating that, like just like shock that he did so well in the race. Like we knew that he was really talented and he was doing so well at the high school level, but we really didn't know. And so he went on, long story short, he went on to have like just this absolute debilitating chronic nausea, and we couldn't figure out what was wrong with him. And chronic nausea, back pain, just pain in his body. And by his senior year, he was still able to run. And he, like at NXN, Nike has like an elite race, an elite nationals. He got fifth place that year. His junior year, he was able to do national races and he got fifth place. And, you know, wasn't able to train like he should be able to train, but still was able to get fifth place. Yeah, he went, he ran for BYU his freshman year, and he had the fastest times that BYU's ever seen from a freshman. And, you know, so he was like, you know, looking at the Olympics and just this incredible, humble kid, but just plagued with this chronic illness that we couldn't figure out.
Yeah.
And I would say this is a part, like going back to personal development for me, where I just, and faith, that I just knew. So the BYU sent him to their doctors, and my husband and I were sitting in the office with them, and he was talking about he'd never had anxiety, and all of a sudden he had this like debilitating anxiety and depression that he's the happiest.
Right.
He is the happiest kid, and he's been taking care of himself. So he's been meditating since he was 10, you know, writing out his goals, everything, every single day, doing affirmations. I mean, just every single thing to take care of yourself mentally. Yeah. You've never met a kid with this kind of discipline. Like he takes care of himself perfectly, as perfectly as someone could in every single way, like physically, mentally, spiritually, all the ways. And his life is just unraveling with this chronic illness. And, I'm kind of losing my train of thought where I was going with that. You'll have to delete this out. What was I trying to say?
No, it's all good. That's the best thing about this podcast is that we're just real. We're having a conversation. It's all good.
I can't remember what question. So
anyway,
he
got that chronic illness, but you guys didn't know what it was.
Oh yes. Okay. We didn't know what it was. So we went to the lots of doctors. I mean, at this point, probably 40 something doctors, and we take him to BYU, you know, their family practice doctor, so we can get in their system. And my husband and I are sitting in the office, and he starts describing his symptoms. And I can tell that the doctor is going to diagnose him with general anxiety disorder, which he did, and put him on anxiety meds. And so we did that. I remember on his high school graduation, they doubled his nothing was touching his nausea. So they doubled his anxiety meds. And I still remember him standing in the kitchen, like taking double the medication. And I finally, you know, after months of that, I just said, there's something else wrong. He does not have anxiety disorder. Yeah. I know he has what sounds like anxiety to doctors, but like I said, my husband's an orthopedic surgeon, he's a physician. And I remember sitting in the car with him, and he said to me, like, when are you going to stop going to doctors and fighting for this illness that is general anxiety disorder? Like, that's his whole problem, is general anxiety disorder. And I said, no, it's not. Like, and I said, I will fight until my last dollar and my dying breath, because he does not have general anxiety disorder. Yeah. And so every doctor, you know, in a lot of ways, his symptoms would fit severe. You know, you can have stomach problems and you can have anxiety that causes nausea. But I knew that something else was wrong with him. And I fought so hard for him. And we have an amazing relationship. We're so close. That's awesome. I knew like at that time his faith had unraveled, like everything that he believed in. He didn't believe that meditation could help, the personal development that could help, that God was real, that anything, like I mean, but
what
we
a
were able
what a
to,
dark place for him at
very
that,
dark
right?
place very, the darkest place you could possibly. I worried about him every single day, but I was lucky that going back to homeschooling, I had a relationship with him where I knew him so well that I knew that he didn't have anxiety disorder because I knew him so well. And I knew that I knew him, and I knew that didn't fit. So we were absolute miracle that, have you had, Allie Jensen?
Yes. Allie Jensen's been on the show. Yes. And she's amazing. Yes. I love her.
Yes. By an absolute miracle. So Trini, her mom actually grew up Lake Powell.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, no way. I love her too.
Yeah. In a way I knew her, okay. But she was 5 years older than me. And so we were never in high school together, but she, by an absolute miracle, not even knowing what was wrong, mm-hmm. or that there it was anything wrong with him, she reached out to me and said, I know what's wrong with your son. Like that, wow. That's a whole long story, but
yeah.
She changed our life and so we were able to get a diagnosis, and you know, there's a whole podcast that. But I mean, he's in so many ways, he's happy. He still can't run, but he's happy. And I feel like his faith and personal development honestly saved his life for sure.
Wow.
Yeah. And finding a diagnosis, but even that, you know, it's, you know, talking to Allie, you really, yeah. it's a roller coaster. And I believe with my whole heart and soul, he will heal and he will get better. And it's been 6 years of that, jeez. But I'll never give up on that. Because I know that he's meant to be well.
Yeah.
And he's still not, but he is mentally so strong and so well.
Yeah.
I think I'm so grateful for what he was taught, what I felt inspired to teach him, you know, him more than all of my other kids.
Right.
He just loved, like he soaked it all up. And like I said, he published a book when he was 16, Healthy Habits for Teens. And the book turned out to be the book that he needed to get through his, you know, at the time when he wrote the book, I remember thinking, you know, nobody wants to hear from a kid who hasn't been through anything hard. Like he just had like massive success, you know, and he wrote this book. And now I feel like you need to rewrite the book because now it comes from
different perspective.
Like he has so much experience. Honestly, at the time, like I hadn't experienced, you know, I grew up having this like terrible accident, but not really hard things. And, you know, I could talk about this, but you know, he had another sibling. I remember when we were like doing the book reveal, he was publishing the book and he had a sister that was struggling with mental health challenges. Uh-huh. And it was just, you know, here I have him, I can hear him in one room on his podcast talking about personal development. And, you know, my other daughter just not wanting to have anything to do with that. You know, when you're in the throes, you just can't, you kind of can't deal with that. So
wow.
That was an interesting journey too. But yeah, they've all come around and they really have embraced that, and it's helped them get through, you know, their deepest, darkest challenges and hard times. But yeah, that's been 6 years of me devoting so much of my time and energy to helping him heal. And in so many ways, he is healed. Like the fact that he lives a very full, happy, productive
life. Says a lot.
Yeah. Yep. Most people would never know that there's anything wrong, but he deals with a lot still, but he's able to not only manage, but he is thriving. So I feel really proud of that.
Well, shout out to Easton and for Trini for reaching out to you guys. And it's so cool how, again, life is happening for us.
Yes.
And it's tough to see it when you're going through it, man. But I'll tell you think about everything that he went through, basically trained him to be able to deal with this heavy thing.
Yes.
And so that's a testament to you guys too, to be able to, I mean, look back at the homeschooling, like, well, had that not happened, who knows? Yeah. I don't know. It's just really cool how all these puzzle pieces start to fit together.
Yeah.
What was it? Steve Jobs that says you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards.
I love that.
And you go, that led to this, that led to this.
Yeah.
And that's amazing. So thank you for sharing that. I know it's probably hard to talk about that sometimes, but thank you.
So thanks. Wow. Thanks for asking.
Now, this is a big question. I know, but what would you say through all of this for you personally is the biggest lesson that you learned through this? And I know that's a big question. There might be 10 lessons. I mean, but is there one that stands out, or you want to share a couple? Or?
Yeah, I think one thing is that for Easton's health, and, you know, I mentioned a little about my daughter suffering from like some mental health things. Mm-hmm. I think you look at people and you think that before all of this happened, I remember my sister saying to me that someone asked her, she said, Lori's life looks so perfect. Mm. And she said, is there anything hard for them? And and my sister said, you know, I remember her telling me, you know, you haven't had a lot of hard things. And at the time, this was before all this happened, I thought, of course, like we'd had struggles.
Right.
And I mean, putting my husband, I had four kids and put my husband through medical school and residency and you know, doing my own things that helped support the family. But also like that, I mean, I raised four kids and in a lot of ways I had four kids so much by myself. Like I did so much of that by myself. And I would say that was challenging, but I knew it would end. Like I knew it would end and he would be around more and he'd be able to help me and we'd raise the kids together. So I always had that perspective. It wasn't that hard.
Yeah.
But I remember when she said that, I thought she is kind of right. Yeah. And then the next 7 years were just absolute hell for health, different health things and different things that happened with my kids. And I just think no matter, it's easy to look at people and think, and in that moment, she wasn't wrong, but everybody gets their chance.
For sure.
And and I think even then, things that my kids were struggling with, like the mental health side of Easton's was for me, his physical, I mean, he had seven different surgeries. He went through a lot physically, but absolutely no question. Watching the mental side of that was my, like, I can share this because he shares this, but I mean, he was really open and we stayed connected through so much of that. There were times that he wasn't as connected to us, but mostly like he would say, I'm struggling, like mentally, I'm scared for myself. And I would have to say, thank you for telling me that. Like, thank you. And he said, I don't want to tell you this. And I said, I need you to tell me when you, like, when you are scared for yourself.
Yep.
And he was able to most of the time be really honest about where he was mentally. And there were times like, I absolutely was worried for his life.
Sure.
Like no question. I was worried for his, like for his life. And so I think what I learned through that is that so much of that the outside world would not see.
Right.
And not because I was trying to hide it. Like even with Trini, when she reached out to me and she said, how are you doing? You know, she felt inspired to reach out to me and she said, how's your family doing? And like I said, she was 5 years older than me. We weren't close. Like I knew her and I knew her family and she knew my family, but we weren't close.
Yeah.
And Easton wasn't, he didn't know how to talk about in a lot of ways what he was going through because he didn't have anyone to relate to. Yeah. So I wasn't sure it was his story to share. Like I wasn't sharing that with people. And anyway, I just was vulnerable with her. And I had just written to my family that morning and said, you know, pray for us. These are the things that he's struggling with that we need answers to. And I had gotten his permission to list it out, like be really vulnerable with my family that this is what he's struggling with. And like specifically, and I just like on a whim decided to send what I had just written to my family to her. And that is why she was able to help me because when she reached out to me, she had no idea that Easton was struggling with anything.
Oh my gosh.
And from the outside world, he's breaking all kinds of records and you wouldn't imagine that he was struggling.
You have no idea. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that I've learned that you look at people and you don't know what they're going through. But you can guess, you know, that 50% of whatever that quote is, that if you know, 50% of the people that you meet, or if you thought that they were going through the hardest thing of their life, you'd be right 100% of the time. Yeah. And I think that's true. Yeah. Like I was going through the hardest time of my life, but I'm putting on a good face every single day for myself. And it's not that I was trying to hide it.
Yeah.
It was his story to share, like the mental health side of it didn't feel fair for me to share. But any mom that has a child that's hurting like that, you're hurting.
Big time.
And, you know, so I had some people that I felt safe in confiding. I felt safe. Like I was careful because it was Easton's story. So I was careful. But I had people that, you know, my family that I'm super close to and some friends that I opened up to. And I was always shocked at people who I thought couldn't relate to what I was going through. I was always shocked at their stories and the ways that, so in a way it opened my eyes to the pain and the suffering that every person has in their life.
Right.
And so I think just recognizing that people are hurting and people are going through things and their life might look perfect on the outside. And again, I wasn't trying to hide it at all. It wasn't my story. I was hurting because he was hurting.
For sure, yeah.
But it wasn't my story to share. Okay, and I can share it now because he's so, I mean, he's been on podcasts.
Yeah, he's so open up. Yeah.
He is so open and honest about his experience. And I'm so happy that he is because it is so helpful for other people. And it's easier to share when you're on the other side of it. And he is on the other side of that. And so it's easier to share then.
I'm so glad he's doing so much better.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, me too.
Well, no, I love the vulnerability too, because that's how you get to know other people. Like, I'm not alone because, you know, you chose to get vulnerable. Like, here's what's going on.
Yeah.
And then it's people just come out of the woodwork and you're like,
well, felt safe. I mean, people have to be a safe place for you to be vulnerable. So I had people and sometimes people that I was surprised, like with Trini, that didn't even make sense for me to be that vulnerable with her. Like, we're not close.
Yeah.
And she didn't even know Easton.
Yeah.
You know, so I want to be that safe person for people so that they can share with me. And you can't be that for everyone, but you can be it for someone.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, that connection piece, you know, in the world I'm in with, you know, dealing with substance abuse and alcoholism and drug addicts, you know, I think it was Johann Hari said the opposite of addiction isn't sobriety, it's connection.
I love that.
And I love that too. And it's so true. Like, that connection piece is what I think what gets us through it. I know for me personally too, when I'm going through something hard and I've got that, still have some connection with people, it really does make a big difference. And it sounded like that's what started to happen as you started to share a little bit.
Yeah. I also, like I mentioned, I was homeschooling my kids and spending a lot of time with my kids. And I realized no one's spending more time with them than me. And so I've read, I mentioned this to you, but I have read so many books, listened to so many podcasts. Yeah. I've always seen myself as I am my kids' life coach because I'm with them the time.
Oh yeah.
And so I very early on in this realized that I need my kids to talk to me. I need them to be open. I need them to talk to me so that I can help them. And I need to have the skills to be able to connect with them and to be able to help them in their journeys. So that's something I've really immersed myself in. I'm really grateful that I had that growing up and that I've continued that because I've read all of Brene Brown stuff. Yeah. She has
She's
much
amazing.
on vulnerability.
Oh, big time.
And that was something that I really, really learned that it was important for me to be vulnerable with my kids too.
Yeah.
Like I can't be there for them if I don't, like even this morning, like I sent my family a text and I sent my family a text and I said, I'm going to be on Todd Sylvester's podcast today. Pray for me, you know? And I feel like maybe before all of this happened, I maybe felt like I wanted, I don't know, this is necessarily true, but I saw myself as like the guide at the front of the ship and not necessarily how important it was for me as a guide to be vulnerable to them on the things that they're appropriate for me to share.
Yeah.
And I feel like over the last 6 years, when someone in our family is suffering or struggling with something, or when I am struggling or suffering from something, that we talk about it. We don't pretend it's not happening.
Yeah.
That we talk about it and we're vulnerable with each other. And, you know, even my husband, like when he's going through something that's hard, I'll say, tell the kids. Like, you know, he went through like where a patient was suing him. And you know, I said, tell the kids like how hard this is, like make sure they know, and even like starting a new practice and like how, you know, I remember he would fly in. We thought it would take 6 months for him to build up a practice in these rural places. They'd be so grateful to have an orthopedic surgeon fly to their places and we would be so busy. And I remember like he would fly his own plane over and he would have two cases and one would cancel. Then he'd do one case and then fly himself home. And I'm like, tell the kids. And you know, it's hard to be vulnerable with your kids because, you know, you have to be vulnerable when it's messy. Like, you know, at the time, I don't know, they could hate him and he could never build up a practice and we could have had to move back to Colorado. Yeah. And honestly, there were times we thought that we would have to move back to Colorado. Yeah. And I just would always encourage him, like, share with the kids. Like, we want them to know that this is hard. Like, like starting a new practice when you're 50 and doing this is hard. Like, it's brave, it's vulnerable, and it's hard. Yeah. And we don't know if it's going to work. Like, I would encourage him to share that. And I would share like things like I've tried so hard to share my failures with my kids so that they would feel comfortable sharing their failures with me. And so that's something that I feel like through this, my greatest accomplishment on this earth is for sure my kids adore each other, that we love each other. We're good at that. Like I'm not good at a lot of things, but I am good
helping
foster. It's all, that is so real that we rally, you know, just on Valentine's Day, none of their friends will listen to this. So it's okay. On Valentine's Day, my 17 year old's going through a breakup and this is just a simple little thing, but all of my kids supported, I mean, she's 3 months in, and all of my kids on Valentine's Day sent her, two of my kids got together and made sure she had flowers on her desk on that morning.
That's awesome.
You know, the other kids like stopped by after their date to be with her. And I just love that, you know, she didn't pretend like she wasn't sad that day, because she doesn't have to pretend, because she knows that she's so loved and she knows that her family will rally. And so it is the single most thing that I am most proud of, is that we are so close and we love each other and we celebrate. My kids are very accomplished. They've accomplished amazing things that I'm so proud of. But the thing I'm most proud of is during their failures and during their hardest things, they share with each other. And we're there for each other.
Wow, that's
and I
beautiful.
Think because of, honestly, it started with Easton's, you know, Easton was willing to be vulnerable through his illness. He was really vulnerable with the family. And so they all rallied and supported him. And because of that, when they're struggling, like he knows how to support people. Because of what, you know, at 22, he knows how to support people like few 22-year-old boys would know how to do. He's amazing at that because of what he's been through.
Wow. I love that. That's amazing. And, you know, I saw this thing once. You may have seen it too. It's pretty popular where there are some guys, he's a billionaire and I don't know the guy's name. I apologize, but he's getting interviewed and they're asking him, what is the definition of success? And everyone's thinking he's going to say some financial advice, right? And he goes right into, well, when your kids are older and they want to hang out with you.
I actually just listened to that.
Did you really? Yeah.
I heard it on, it was on Brendan Burchard's. It was on his growth day.
Yeah. How true is that though? You know, like your kids want to hang with you when they're older.
Yeah. I'm trying
That's when you're like.
I actually just, my husband and I just came back to Cabo and we set goals. Uh-huh. We do this every quarter. We set our goals. And I, after listening to that, it was on growth day. I can't remember who the billionaire is. He's the founder of some big company, but I just heard that. And I said, that is my new definition of success.
For sure.
Is that my kids.
Same here.
And there's so many things that encompass that I asked my husband that question. I said, what would be the definition of success to you? And I said, I just heard this and is my new definition. And I think it encompasses everything for me. Because my friend just sent me this morning that I've heard before. Like, my kids know that I would die for them. I know they know that. Like, my kids know that, like, I am a warrior for them.
Yeah,
but I also do want my kids to know that I will live for them. Like, I will keep growing. I will keep chasing my dreams. Because if you're not living, you are slowly dying. And I want my kids to see me continuing to grow And, you know, I'm in a transition phase where I told you I'm selling my salon suites. And it's a transition phase for me that my daughter, who's a junior in high school, she only has one more year at home.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm looking at like, what are my dreams and goals and how do I want to spend my time and how do I want to be remembered? And I think my kids are not going to want to hang out with me if I'm not. I need to be inspiring to myself, and I want them to look at me and say, you know, when she raised her kids, then she did this. You know, she did this while she was raising kids.
Sure.
And to me, your kids wanting to hang out with you is not just, they're so like, I gotta be awesome because my kids are awesome. So if they want to hang out with me, I'm doing cool stuff with my life because. Yeah. I want to have interesting conversations, you know, with them as long as I can think straight and clearly. We're going to have interesting, good, inspiring conversations. That means I have to do awesome things with my life. So I love that you said that because I really did. I was at the gym listening to that. I'm like,
that's cool.
This is it. This is my new definition of success. In all the ways is that my kids want to hang out with me. And right now I'm really lucky because my kids want to hang out with me.
Yeah. So, you're doing something right.
Yeah. So in this moment I'm successful and it's tough to stay there because like I said, my kids are impressive and they're doing awesome things with their life. And I love that we're all best friends.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, you are awesome.
So thank you.
I really mean that. I think the world of you, Lori. You're amazing and a great example. Even through the tough times and the good times and just owning it and being vulnerable, all of it, all the above.
Well, thank you.
It's been wonderful to hear all this. I know you're selling your business. Do you have something you could share with us that maybe you're looking forward to doing or you're just still kind of trying to iron that out?
I'm definitely still processing.
Okay.
like I said, I think that one thing that I'm so proud of is that Elevation Life Summit that I hosted for the teens.
It was amazing.
And I think there's so much that you can do with kids at that age. Mm-hmm. And I did that during the pandemic.
Yep.
And it was such a unique moment in time where there were all these amazing people and these amazing speakers that I realized turns out they have time because they're not traveling and they're not speaking. So they have time.
Yeah.
And I know that people love to give back. And so we had these amazing speakers and every person that I asked said yes. You know, we had you and Justin Osmond and we had Stephen Covey people there.
Yeah,
you probably were only Matt Townsend. And every single person that we asked said yes, donated their time. And that was one of the most proud moments of my life is feeling like this needed to happen and that kids would come together and that people would say yes. And, you know, it was an amazing weekend. And I would love to do something that merges personal development. I would love to do something with teens. And I would dedicate my whole entire life to helping kids that have, I haven't even said the word of it, but my son has vascular compression syndrome. And we're learning that the root cause of that is that your nervous system gets inflamed. And it's something that we recently, you know, have discovered that is the root cause. And it can come on, these things come on, you have physical abnormalities for sure, and you're prone to it. You're genetically prone to it. So for Easton, he got a virus. It could have been like even that race along with a virus triggered. And so thank the heavens that he is so able to, like he's always so able. He's the most, you know, like I said, the most disciplined person I know. And he already has worked but it goes way beyond mindset, yoga or meditation, but you retraining your brain. And I know that, like I said, I know we're going to get there and I know that we're going to figure that out. And if not, I'm absolutely going to die trying. And I would love to crack that code, figure that out. And I would help those kids, those parents, those moms, those people for the rest of my life.
Wow.
And so that's my focus is on that.
Okay.
And starting something with that. And like I said, my business is going to sell in another month and I just keep thinking and fine tuning that. But cool. I would love to dedicate my life to that. But,
I love it.
But I have to crack the code first.
Yeah. Well, you'll figure that out.
Yeah,
if someone's going to do it, it'll be
we're
you.
We're getting closer. I know
I can feel your passion. So, everyone listen to this. You feel her passion, so, right? Wow, this is awesome.
So thank
I
you.
I love it. You know, one of the questions I want to ask you here in closing, if there's, and I know a lot of people listening to this are struggling with something.
Yeah.
You know, you said, you know, everyone's going through something. If there's someone listening to us right now and they're in a dark place, they don't know what to do, they're lost or whatever, and just in a bad place, what could you tell them right now? What would you say to them?
So this, I'm going to say something I didn't expect to say, and then I'll say the thing that I expected
okay.
to say. I didn't expect to say that it is so important that you're honest and you own it. And I don't think people, like, you trust, you have someone that you can trust.
Yeah.
And like Brené Brown says, give it a name. Mm-hmm. And then it, and not to say, yeah. and I'm a big believer in yeah. this. And, you know, recently Easton went through his whole Instagram and deleted everything to do with health. Every post he ever did with health, he deleted it because he doesn't want to identify as someone who has a debilitating chronic illness. Even though it is a huge part of his life,
yeah.
it is not his identity.
It's not who he is.
It's not yeah. who he is, even though it is so ever present in his life.
Yeah.
And so it's a fine balance between not identifying as that, like you are not your illness, but also being willing to, you have to have people that you can share and that you can be honest and that they can hold
yeah.
space for you
yep.
to be vulnerable and tell you how you're really feeling.
Yeah.
And so I would say to anyone struggling, find someone that you can trust and also trust that there is help. There's always something that you can do to improve your life. Like there's always hope. There's always help. There's always people who you don't think can relate, but they
yeah.
can.
Yeah.
So just being willing to be vulnerable and ask for help and just keep fighting. Like I remember having a conversation with Easton in the kitchen where he like would say, God can't be real because I can't, there's no God would let someone feel the amount of pain that God can't be real if I can feel this much pain.
Right. Yeah.
And I remember telling him like, you fight to know that. And he knew how present darkness was before he could find the light again.
Yeah.
And I think that's okay. I think finding darkness and acknowledging the darkness and how dark it really is sometimes is your path to finding light. And for him, it yeah. was the path to finding
wow.
light. But I would just say, trust that there is help. Trust that there's better days. Trust that this too shall pass. And even though you still might be carrying it, it can be lighter than it is. There's something that you can do to make it lighter than
yeah.
it is today. And what I was going to say is the only advice, you know, the longer I live, the more I realize I have absolutely no advice for anyone. But one thing I can say is that something that my husband and I have done that I've encouraged my kids to do is you always have to have goals. And
yeah.
I think there's so much magic in 90 days. Sometimes you can think you can get so caught up in, you know, what am I going to do in my life? But what are you going to do in 90 days? Like, how can you
yeah.
improve your life in all the areas that matter, you know? And sometimes, like during our darkest times, sometimes it was like, I can be a friend. I would list the people I wanted to be a friend to, you know, for
yeah.
those 90 days.
Yeah.
Or I would list, you know, I said, like, I love to work out and I love
yeah.
to take care of myself. And how can I take care of myself a little bit better? How can I be a better friend? How can I practice my faith just a little bit better? And so I think having concrete, so we, every 90 days, my husband and I get together, like we'll go to a hotel or like we did just go to Cabo, but we can just go to downtown Salt Lake. We usually do try to get away,
yeah.
be like in
yeah.
a place that it is inspiring to us for
right.
whatever reason,
yeah.
not at home. We're outside of our space
yeah.
and we set goals personally and as a couple of how we want to become better. And I hope that that's something that my kids carry with them, is just that you can always be a little bit better, but also accepting yourself for where you are. Like sometimes those goals are
yeah.
so small. Like I
right.
can be a little bit better friend. I can,
yeah.
you know, like I remember when we first moved here, I thought I need friends. Like I'm a friend girl. I value my relationships so much, and it takes time to develop those. It does, so I would just have to set like the tiniest, like the tiniest little ways. And also I'm so busy, you know, with my business and with my kids, but I value friendships and relationships so much. And I just think we all need that in and outside of our family so much. But those just tiny, yeah. Sometimes they're tiny little goals, but I believe in 90 days, you can be a little bit better.
Wow. I love that. Beautifully said. Thanks for sharing that.
Thank you.
I love that. You know, if someone wanted to reach out to you and just to, you know, follow you and get to know your family a little bit better or understand more of maybe they have someone who's going through the same thing that your son's been going through, what would be the best way for someone to reach out to you?
The best place right now is on Instagram, Lori K. Allred.
Okay.
And I don't post super often, but I'm on Instagram. So if you wanted to direct message me, I definitely am on Instagram.
Okay. And we'll put that in the show notes so they can get right to it. But yeah, I hope that they do, because again, I've learned a lot from you today, and I've learned a lot from you just because I've known you for a while now, and it's been so wonderful. Again, having you on here is an honor to me. I love the way you carry yourself, the way you raise your family. It's truly inspiring. As I'm sitting here listening to you the whole time, I'm going, okay, I'm going to improve here. I'm going to be better here. I'm going to work. And it really is. It's been inspiring. I'm not beating myself up, but I'm just like, you know what? This makes me want to do a few other things. So thank you for inspiring me today.
Thank you. Thank you. I coming from you, that is a massive compliment, because I've been inspired by you since the day I met you. So
thank you. You bet. Well, there you go, folks. Lori Allred, please reach out to her. If you have someone in your family who's struggling, give them a link to this episode. They need to hear it. Thank you for subscribing and downloading and sharing. It means the world to me. Again, shout out to my sponsors. I love you guys. Again, Paul Cardall, thank you for your beautiful music. You're an amazing man. And I'm grateful for this opportunity to be able to sit here with Lori. I know that you feel what I'm feeling. It's an amazing thing when we connect like this. So I love you guys. Until next time. Thanks again.